I'm joined on the phone right now with Brian Concannon Jr., who works with the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, the IJDH. He joins us on the phone from Joseph, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Brian.
Thank you, Aaron. It's good to be here.
So just to begin, can you tell our listeners a bit about the work that the IJDH is doing in Haiti right now?
Sure. The IJDH was founded after the coup d'etat in February of 2004, and we do three types of work. The first thing we do is we do litigation. We represent political prisoners in Haiti and in international courts, political prisoners and victims of violence in Haiti. The second thing we do is documentation. We have a large website, www.ijdh.org, which has the most comprehensive collection of information about human rights in Haiti. And the third thing we do is grassroots advocacy. We help grassroots groups in both Haiti and outside of Haiti, including the United States and Canada. We help them to better bring the plight of Haiti's poor to the world's attention.
You just wrote up a report just this past October the 17th entitled "Electoral Cleansing in Haiti Violates Human Rights and Democracy." In there you state, "Haiti is in the midst of a comprehensive program of electoral cleansing." Can you explain this a little bit?
Sure. They're trying to clean, they're trying to clean the ballots themselves. They've arrested several leaders of several government opponents, including the most likely presidential candidate, a priest by the name of Father Gerard Jean-Just, and he's been held since July on trumped-up charges after spending 7 weeks last year in jail on trumped-up charges. But there are several other people who would be candidates for local offices, and they're being kept off the ballot by the fact that they are being kept in jail. The second kind of cleansing is cleansing of the electoral rolls themselves. There's been, although lately, in part because of criticism by human rights groups, they've started to expand the registration. The registration so far has always been very much skewed in favor of people likely to support the government. For instance, in as far as August had gone, there were three voting registration centers in the wealthy suburb of Pétionville, and there were three voting registrations in the entire region of the Central Plateau, which is a very large and difficult region in rural Haiti. There were also, until about 2 weeks ago, there was not a single registration center in the poor neighborhood of Cité Soleil. And so there's an attempt to get a very skewed electorate, skewed in favor of the government and its supporters. And the third way that they are cleansing Haiti's elections is to cleanse the streets themselves. For the entire month of September, there were no demonstrations allowed, and that's as unconstitutional in Haiti as it would be in any other country. The government first said it was because school was coming back, and then they said that they had to prohibit demonstrations because of elections, which seems absolutely absurd. And so far in October, there hasn't been any bans, but that's because all the major demonstrations had been planned for September, and we expect that if anybody does organize another demonstration in the coming weeks, that will be met with an additional ban. And so they're really trying to have a very limited amount of candidates and a very limited amount of participation by both voters and organizers.
Now, going back to the issue of polling stations, which I think is one that's a fairly pressing issue in Haiti right now, we've heard reports stating that the actual amount of polling stations throughout the country has gone down drastically since the last elections. The last figure I heard was it was down from about 12,000 in the last elections to 600 this time around. What tangible effects will that take on the ground in Haiti during these upcoming elections?
Yeah, I think the latest report from the UN was 450 stations, permanent stations, and 50 mobile ones. I'm not sure how they're going to do a mobile election booth, but it's far less than a tenth of what the Democratic government had done. And this will obviously depress the vote by quite a bit. If you've been to Haiti, Haiti does not have many good roads. The vast majority of people do not have any kind of their own transportation. They don't have their own cars. And even a large part of the people don't have effective public transportation because the public transportation and the roads are so bad that in many areas of the country, the only way of getting around is by donkey or on foot. And if there will be some people in Haiti who will go to absolutely extraordinary lengths to vote, and because Haitians really believe in democracy, and there will be people who will walk 6 or 8 hours for the opportunity to stand in line for 3 hours to vote. That obviously would never happen in the United States, and I don't think it would happen in Canada. But the reality is that by making people walk 1, 2, 3, 6 hours to vote, you're going to depress it, and you're going to have fewer people voting. You're going to have more people voting who have SUVs and fewer people voting who are walking, who have to walk to the polls, and that will obviously have a result, have an effect on the result. It will increase the votes for wealthy people and their representatives, and decrease the votes of the poor.
Turning now to the international community, in your report, you state the persecution and disenfranchisement of political opponents is being conducted openly, notoriously, and under the eyes of the international community. Can you explain the role of the international community, maybe specifically the USA, Canada, and perhaps the UN around these elections?
Sure. The U.S., all three of those organizations, the U.S., Canada, and the U.N., they want elections because they need to claim victory. The U.S. and Canada especially were very active in the regime change in February of 2004, and their response to criticism of that is to say, oh, no, we want elections, we want democracy. And so they need to be able to say they had elections. They're not particularly interested in having elections where poor people will win. That was the problem with the 2000 elections, and that's why the U.S. and Canada needed to oust the democratic elected government. But what they do want is to be able to say they had elections and to have somebody who's going to pursue pursue policies that the rich countries want and not what the poor voters want them to do. Specifically, what they're doing is the U.S. and Canada are financing most of the electoral operations, everything from the CEP. They're financing the CEP, who are running the elections. They're also financing most of the watchdog organizations that are supposed to evaluate whether the elections are any good. And as a result of, because the money's all coming from the same couple places, what people are saying are pretty much the same. And you have the observers and you have the elections officials saying, well, there are some problems, but we've got to keep going. And we're basically on the right track. One of the most absurd examples of this was last week when you had the head of the human rights section of the UN finally, after not really saying much for about a year and a half, finally called Haiti's human rights situation a catastrophe. In the days that followed, Canada announced another large donation to the Electoral Council. The U.S. announced that it continued faith in the Haitian government, despite the fact that you've got a human rights situation that's a catastrophe. No one's saying that this should affect the elections.
You mentioned the issue of political prisoners just a little while ago. In fact, Canada's Prime Minister Paul Martin has been quoted saying that there are no political prisoners in Haiti. However, we have numerous reports from the ground in Haiti to indicate that many people are being persecuted and even killed for their support of the ousted President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. How do you feel this issue of political prisoners, specifically people from the former Lavalasse government who are in prison right now, how do you feel this will affect the election in Haiti?
Well, first of all, as you mentioned, it's obviously happening, and it's not just me saying it. It's even the United Nations has been saying it. Amnesty International has called Father Jean Juste a prisoner of conscience, and most serious human rights observers have been saying for well over a year that there's a systematic problem of human rights, of political prisoners in Haiti. And the Canadian governments and the U.S. governments are saying, no, that's not true, but they have no response to the very real documentation of this problem. In terms of how it's going to affect the election, obviously it keeps all those people off the ballot. But even more, for every person who's in jail, the government knows that it is dissuading several more, perhaps dozens more, from campaigning, because if someone can be arrested just because they're a government opponent, a lot of other people are going to say, well, I'm just not going to get involved. I've got a family to support, or my life is too precarious as it is, and I can't be active in politics because I can't afford to be thrown in jail, or my family can't afford to be thrown in jail for 2 or 3 or 20 months without trial. And so obviously it's having a huge chilling effect. There's also been fairly constant repression against the press, and that's having a chilling effect. Any journalists who not necessarily are anti-government in their analysis, but are merely giving a microphone or quoting government dissidents, or who do any kind of examining of the government's record that is critical of the government, those people are intimidated. Radio stations have been closed down. Others have been threatened with being closed down. Just last month, a couple journalists were beat up for trying to get into the opening of the courts. And so there's a very serious chilling effect, and I think throughout Haiti that nobody really feels free to either actively participate in politics or to actively write about what's going on. When I say nobody, I mean any government opponents. I mean, obviously, the people who support the government, which is by all accounts a small minority, they're very happy with the situation, and they are free to say what they think.
Maybe finally, just to wrap up, here in Montreal, a local NGO, Alternatives, recently got a contract to train local media in Haiti to report on the elections. However, at the same time, there's been considerable debate around Alternatives for parroting the same line on Haiti as the Canadian government and the mainstream media. In fact, some would call the role of many foreign NGOs in Haiti as problematic at best. I'd just like to know where you see the IJDH fitting in to the role of foreign NGOs in Haiti, and how you see the work you're doing in relation to other NGOs there at this crucial time.
I think one of the key aspects of any NGO is to look at where their funding comes from. And I believe Alternatives, and certainly a lot of other Canadian and American NGOs that are supporting the current government or the electoral process, their money is coming from the Canadian government and the U.S. government. And that is definitely affecting how they go about their work. And I know this because I lived in Haiti for 8 years, and I had a lot of friends who were working for NGOs that were sponsored by Haitian, by the U.S. and Canadian governments. And it's very clear that those governments make very specific suggestions, and people who don't follow those suggestions don't get renewed funding. And as far as where IJDA fits into that, we don't receive any funding from any political party or any governments. We receive our funding from a couple of foundations, and then from a lot of individuals, church groups, solidarity groups, and therefore we're not neither our funding nor our policy is tied to any government, and us, as well as several other groups that are able to independently assess the situation, we tend to have a very different view of what's going on than the people who are or are there because the U.S. or the Canadian government are paying them to. Mm-hmm. And if I may make a quick recommendation, there's an excellent book on that discusses the role of NGOs in Haiti. It's called Waging War on the Poor Majority, Canada in Haiti. And it's by Eve Engler and Anthony Fenton. It just came out. It's an excellent book that I would highly recommend. I'd like to add an encouragement of Canadians to see what's going on in Haiti. I think that both the Canadian government and the American government share a very brutal policy in Haiti. But I think one difference that you have in Canada that we don't have in Haiti is that that we don't have in the U.S. is that I think that most Canadians do not agree with a brutal suppression of the poor of a country, and it's a little bit harder to get that message across to the American public. I think Canadians have that privilege, and I would encourage everybody to try to organize and to force your government to respect the autonomy and sovereignty of Haiti's poor.
We've been on the phone with Brian Concannon Jr. of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, on the phone with us from Joseph, Oregon. Thank you very much for taking the time with us today, Brian.
Okay, and thank you for caring about Haiti, Aaron.